Hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Beautiful Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Abigail Gagnon, and the episode that you are about to listen to is a part two of Cycle Talk with Sarah Corman. So the first part of this episode released and came out earlier this morning, and I just split it up into two parts because I think it's a really important educational episode that I think everybody should listen to, whether you're male, female, and I wanted to make sure that it was split up into a little bit of easier sections to listen to. That being said, if you have not listened to the first part, I would highly recommend going back and listening to the first part of the episode and then coming back to this one. So I hope that you enjoy the second part of this episode, that you enjoyed the first part, and that it taught you something and made you feel validated, less alone. And men, if you listen, I hope that you really took something away from it and are able to apply it to your relationships, whether it be with your sisters, friends, you know, mother, grandmother, aunts, uncles, wife, girlfriend, whoever. And yeah, I hope that you all enjoy this episode as much as Sarah and I enjoyed recording it for you guys. Absolutely. That makes complete sense. And going back to the menstruation part of the cycle with different types of bleeding, like spotting, if it's heavy, dark, bright, brown, what are some of the meanings behind those different things?
Yeah, good question. Good question. So there is almost like a rainbow that people may experience when it comes to different colors of blood. Ultimately, the reddest red of the blood is, like, I'm going to say, quote unquote, healthiest, but it's really about, again, like it's about just learning what it is for you. But the redder the blood, it means that it's fresh, because when blood is exposed to oxygen, it can start to turn brown. So it's a good indicator to know if you have red blood. That means everything is flushing through the right, you know, on time. It's really, you know, the endometrium is shedding the blood. And, you know, sometimes with, even with like the bright red blood, there can be some like thickness to it because we're releasing tissue, and that's totally normal. Sometimes there can be some clots in there, which are normal, but also just want to keep an eye on them. If they start to get too big, then it can also be a sign of too much estrogen. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. Red means it's fresh and that everything is kind of working in the right way. Brown, when things start to get brown, it's like I said, it can be starting to oxidize. So sometimes you may have brown spotting at the beginning of your period. And then it might, you know, turn pink and then red, right? So that is like almost like we haven't fully released from the last cycle. Or we can find that brownish color start to come at the end of our period, the end of the bleed. And that is like we still have some stagnancy going on and we haven't fully released the blood because it's still, you know, kind of built up from the beginning of the bleed. So those are the two main things to know, that those are pretty normal to have happen. With the brownness, like you just want to keep an eye on it, like notice the smell, you know, if it does start to smell a certain way, or, you know, if it's like you're brown the whole time that you're bleeding, that's stuff to look out for. But also knowing that that's a stagnancy issue, sometimes it's just about maybe adding a little bit more movement into our period time. You know, sometimes we like don't want to do anything, right? We're just like, oh, I just want to bleed and do nothing. But a little bit of movement is really, really good to keep the blood flow moving so that it doesn't just sit there, because stagnancy is never really the goal here. Although we do want to rest when we're on our period. So that's something to notice with the brown. So it's either we maybe need to add a little movement or we need to add more rest. You know, it's one or the other. So if that's what you're experiencing, really like take stock of what is going on your period. Are you resting enough? Are you moving too much? Or are you not moving at all? And just make some adjustments from there. And then, you know, there's other colors too. Like if you see orange, that is not, I'm going to say that that is not normal. So I want you to definitely talk to your doctor. If you're seeing orange, that also could be the sign of an infection of some sort. But then there's also dark, dark, dark red blood. So there's a difference between the crimson blood that looks like fresh blood and like almost black or purple blood. So that black, that dark, dark blood, that's also something to notice. And sometimes, I say sometimes because it could, there's a lot of things that this stuff could mean, but just to give you an idea, it could also be that sign of too much estrogen in the blood. And we would notice that there are certain times in the cycle where estrogen is high, like we were talking about in the beginning, where estrogen peaks, you know, and then it falls. So those are times to really look at what's going on, like with our energy levels and with our stress response. The way that the body releases during menstruation has a lot to do with the way our nervous system is responding to things. Okay, that could be a conversation for another time too. But so those are the main colors, right? There's also spotting, right? So like that's it's totally normal to spot, but if the spotting is excessive, like if you never really have a full bleed, or if the spotting is like, you know, for days before your actual bleed, that's the stuff you want to take note of. And I would just recommend bringing that up with your doctor. I don't want to say like what it is here because there's so many things that it could be, but those are the things to notice, you know. And also sometimes people experience spotting during ovulation. And again, like we were talking about, what's actually happening during ovulation is actually really normal to release like maybe a drop or two of blood, because there is something that's actually, you know, I hate this word, but rupturing, you know, your follicle, mm-hmm. it's called a rupture. The follicle ruptures, the egg releases, the tubes are moving, like there's definitely stuff going on. So there could be a little spotting during ovulation, but if you're having like almost a full bleed during ovulation, then I want you to see your doctor too. So those are just some things to look at, but you know, spotting is normal, and spotting at the end of the bleed is normal, just as it starts to taper off. And sometimes even like that brown blood can mix with a little spotting, and it might look kind of, you know, pinkish, something like that. It is normal. But again, tracking yourself and just see like, is this normal for you? Is this been happening for you? Or is this something new that's happening? You know, that's why tracking is really, really helpful for us.
That is awesome information. I have never seen orange blood. I've seen
good.
I've seen everything else. But with that, with spotting, if it's at the beginning, mm-hmm. would that count as day one of menstruation, or is it not until full bleeding?
Yep. Good question. This is like the number one question that people ask me. That is so good that you went there. But yes, so we call the first full day of blood, we call that day one. So if you have spotting up until your bleed, that is not day one. Day one is when there's a full bleed, when you can really identify it as like, okay, I'm releasing now. Like this is the blood. Because, you know, sometimes like just one example is that because of stress, for example, body is like not necessarily feeling safe enough to fully release. So it will start the process and start trickling. And then finally, once it's like, can't take it anymore, you know, it's like, okay, we're doing this. And then it's the full bleed, and that's your cue to like really relax and sit down. and the spotting is your body actually probably telling you, hey, I'm getting ready to do this, but the conditions just aren't right now. So it can be a sign to, you know, they're all signs, it's all signs and signals, just messages. There's just a conversation happening, and we can get better at reading it, you know, and then interacting with it. But yeah, so yes. So to your question, the first full day of bleeding is day one.
Okay. That is how I've been tracking. But then when you were talking about it, I was questioning myself.
Yeah. No, you were right. You got it.
Awesome. And with when we're bleeding, obviously this kind of goes into the next question of pads, tampons, cups, cloth pads, free bleeding, all the things. What is your recommendation? Obviously, I know it's different for everybody, but what would you say is the best option and the worst option and why?
You're right. I'm going to say like, it's different for everybody. Like it's, you really have to do this journey on your own. I'm here to be your guide, but like, this is your journey. But I do find that, you know, because of the way that we relate to our periods, like I was saying earlier, like the messaging is just like, well, just plug it up and just keep going, you know? So tampons make that really easy. If that's what you're trying to do, to just like plug it up and keep going. But I don't recommend that. I don't recommend that that's how we relate to our cycle. Tampons are convenient. I think that if you need to use one, it's like great. It's great technology. Like how cool. But ultimately on an every month regular basis, it is very beneficial to allow your blood to release freely. So that could mean a pad, that could mean period underwear, which is my personal favorite. I love my period underwear. But a menstrual cup isn't really the same as letting the blood fully release and actually touch the vaginal wall as it comes out, because blood has, your period blood specifically is life. It is like baby life. It is full of stem cells. And it's really important for this whole cycle, because this is a cleansing cycle. Your body is trying to literally cleanse. It's trying to give you an amazing mini death and rebirth every single month. It's so amazing. And in order to do that, like part of the process is to replenish that whole area with the stem cells that are coming each and every month that are new. So, and it also really helps the vaginal microbiome for the blood to interact with the tissue at the same time. And that release and that whole process is very, very on purpose. So when we put a tampon in, what's the tampon doing? It's literally sucking up all the juices, all the, you know, all the lubrication, all the juices, all the blood, and it's like prematurely sucking it up, and then we're pulling it out. And you know, like you've had, I'm sure, times when like a tampon feels dry and it hurts. And like, that's just not like the energy that we want to treat that area with, in my opinion. But of course, like it's convenient. And if you are like, you know, I don't know, there's a million reasons why you might want to use a tampon, and I'm not knocking tampons, but on a regular basis, if you can really allow that process to happen. And, you know, when I stopped using tampons, one of the things that I really had to get used to was feeling my blood come out and being like, oh shoot, like, am I leaking? You know, oh no. And that's like a whole thing to get used to, of like feeling what that feels like to allow the blood to come out and to not try to tense your cervix and not try to like suck in and try to tense everything up, and really just allow that process, that really natural process of the blood leaving your body, allow it to happen, you know? And, you know, we can go so far with this, like what you can actually do with your menstrual blood when you collect it in a certain way, like give it back to the earth. Plants love it. It's like, again, it's life. It's got stem cells. So just wasting it on a tampon just seems so sad.
Yeah. Yeah. So I personally, I've never used period underwear yet. What brand do you use and like recommend?
Yeah. There are many different kinds. I am currently using a brand called Bam Body, and it's bamboo fiber. So it's BAMBODY. You can get them online and they are pretty affordable. And they run really small, just so you know. So if you're going to order them, like order 1 to 2 sizes up, which I think is a cruel trick on your period, but that's just how it is. But there's also, a friend of mine is just talking to me and she's like, I'm getting on the organic cotton trend now, because you know, what we put there in that specific area also, like we suck everything up through that. So, I'm on the organic search right now, but Bam Body has served me really well for years. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I haven't really used tampons because the few times I have, it was very painful. It leaked. And I'm also very sensitive, like my skin in general. And the last time I used one, so I had borrowed, well, not borrowed, but taken one from a friend. And I don't know what was on it. I thought that it was like fragrance free or whatever. I don't know what, but I ended up being so itchy and felt like I had a UTI for days. It was terrible. And I'm like, nope, never again. And some people, you know, have told me like, oh, well, you should, you know, use them so you can, you know, you live on a lake. Don't you want to be able to swim and go in the water? And I was like, I would rather not go in the water for a couple of days and just stick my feet in or walk up until my knees than deal with that. Like, I'm good.
Yeah, I hear you. I know tampons can be like a very traumatic experience. And I know it was for me when I first used one. And that, like, I think a lot of things when we're first getting our periods can be traumatic. And I, you know, it just, it never really seemed like, it just seemed like that's what everyone was doing. You know, more of this messaging of like, oh, that's just what it is to be a woman, like, just do it. But also your menstruation actually shuts off in water.
Oh,
isn't that crazy?
That's interesting, because now that I think about it, when I've taken a bath on my period, there's not blood, all in water. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So if I were to put on my bathing suit and go in the water, as long as I like immediately then can't put a pad on, I'd be fine.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You'd be fine.
And I'm going to have to try this next summer.
I think you should. I think you should. And also, like, you can wear period underwear, like, in the water. You just have to, like, make sure that you wring it out after, because they're very absorbent, kind of the purpose of them. But if you were, like, you didn't want to, like, have to, like, run inside and you wanted to just, like, hang out a little bit or whatever, like, I think period underwear is also another really good option. You know, now that we're talking, I'm sure that they have bathing suits at this point. That's something I'm going to look into. Yeah.
I'm going to now look into it too.
Yeah, totally.
That's really interesting. Yeah. That's something I never knew.
And
when you were talking about traumatic stuff at the beginning of when you first get your period, when I first got my period, I broke my arm a couple days before. And then I went to go like change for bed, or I don't know what I was doing. And then I remember like yelling for my mom and like freaking out and be like, of course, of all times that I could have my period, I have to have a broken arm. And then like she had to like help me take the pad off. And like it was so awkward. And it was not a fun time. And I broke my arm. It was either on my birthday, it was right after. I know it was at my birthday party. So it was like a whole like traumatic week for me.
Oh my gosh. I know. So how do you think that like affected your experience of your like menstruation? You know, like knowing that that was like a crazy first experience. Like, how do you think that affected you?
I don't know. I've never really thought about it. I know it's something, like I said, I know that like my mom like told me when we talked about sex and whatever, like what it was. And like, I knew that that's what had happened to me. It wasn't like I started my period and was like, oh my gosh, I'm dying. But I don't remember learning too much about it, minus like you wear a pad or, you know, we do have these tampons and whatever. But I do remember it being like traumatic, but I don't remember, like, I don't know. I'm going to have to think about that question now.
Yeah. Think about it. Cause like, I think it's important to know that like the way that we first experience our periods, which is called menarche, like the first occurrence of menstruation in menarche, is the way that we experience that usually has some sort of effect on the way that we experience our period. And then if we don't do this kind of awareness here, then it then in turn affects the way that we experience menopause, you know? So I think it is always kind of helpful to go back and to think about that, you know, from our childhood of like, what did that feel like? And is there anything there that I wish had been different? Or like, you know, trying to even send the love back to your younger self in a way so that it can kind of clear the you know, the timelines or whatever. But it's really interesting. I'm the cycle talk that we're doing in person in Biddeford, Maine. If anyone, I don't know if this will come out February 13th, we're going to be doing, we're actually going to be talking about this and healing our menarche stories. And like I was saying, like co-regulating with each other and being able to talk about these stories. And I have my friend coming to do some drumming for us, which really helps to like get into that womb space and really clear some energy that could be there. So it's going to be really, really beautiful. But I was just thinking about that. You know, like our first period stories are so impactful sometimes.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I know that like one of the things that I started doing a couple years ago was occasionally writing a letter to younger me. So maybe that will be one of the time frames I write to myself.
Yes, I love that.
And with that, what is, for anyone that's listening, that's a mom and that wasn't like kind of told these things, what are some like tips for how and when to talk to their daughters and like the average age that people should start talking to their daughters about it? Because, you know, it's coming.
Yes. Yes. I love this question. Yes, Abigail. So good. As soon as possible. I think that now that the taboo has kind of been lifted a little bit on menstrual awareness, I think as soon as we can start talking to our children about menstruation and what it means to have a cycle is really awesome, you know, and like however you want to be able to explain, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and some of this makes sense to you, use it, you know, like tell the story of the seasons and whatever you feel like your child will relate to, because I think it's important, like, especially if you're a new mother or, you know, you have young kids and maybe you have now gotten your period back and you are experiencing this in the house with your kids and they might not know what's going on. You know, I think it's really important to include them in this because it is part of life. Everybody is affected by the menstrual cycle. Whoever you are, wherever you are, it's how you got here. It's, you know, you're experiencing it always because you're around women all the time. So I would say as soon as you can to start telling stories, to start talking about what it means to have a cycle like this. And, you know, you don't have to get so sciencey. You don't have to be like, this is when the egg and the da, 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 and menstruation, like, but just talking about the cycle. And then, you know, if you're talking to your daughter, like as you start to notice that maybe there's like other signs of puberty, you know, like breast development or a lot of times we notice because our hormones start to smell, you know, like you have body odor and that's like a sign that you're starting to enter into this phase of life. I personally got my period. My menarche was when I was 10 years old, which is pretty early, but my mom also had hers when she was 10 years old. So, you know, a lot of times that really does go hand in hand. So like, if you can think back on when yours was, maybe when your daughter's approaching that age, to really start to prepare her for what's going on. And then another tip that I got from one of my teachers, Gemma Lee from the Cyclical School, she has mentioned to, this is like a ritual that you can do, but before your daughter has her period, because sometimes it might even though you may feel comfortable talking about it, like she may not as a young person. So there's a little trick you can do, like buy her a red towel. So when she has her period, maybe not the first time, but like times after this, she can put the red towel in the bathroom. Therefore, she doesn't need to talk about it. She doesn't need to announce to everyone, hey, it's my time of the month. But everyone is kind of aware, you know, like, okay, red towel. There we go. Like, that's just a nice little tip to like make her feel like she has some ownership over what it is and but doesn't have to feel pressure to like talk to her dad or talk to her brother. But if we include this conversation as just normal part of life, then it should, you know, it would be easier and it would just kind of be seamless to just be like, yeah, red towel in the bathroom. She's got her period. Like we all know what that is. So I think that I think that's cute too. And it's like a coming of age kind of rite of passage. Like, oh, you got your red towel, you know?
I love that. Yeah. I didn't realize that some people got it so young. I think I was 12 or 13. I can't remember which birthday it was, but I know it was one of the two.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, so you got your period like on your birthday?
Or it was like right, it was right after, because I know that I had my birthday party, and I don't know, I'd have to go back looking, literally looking at the calendar, but I know that we would always have our birthday party the Sunday after our birthday, or sometimes the Sunday before, depending on where it fell in the week. And then I broke my arm at my birthday party. And then a couple days later, I had a cast. And I know it wasn't the same day, because I didn't get a cast, I think, until a couple days later, because I had to go to a separate place to get the cast and all that. And then I got home from getting the cast on, and I went to, like, I don't know, change into pajamas or whatever. And then I noticed I was bleeding.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
And I was like, this is terrible.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Well, it's like, yes, aside from like how maybe traumatic that was, it's also amazing that you got your period so close to your birthday. Like, I think that's so cool. Like, the past few years for me personally, I've gotten my period on my birthday. And it feels like, it just feels so symbolic to me. You know, it's like, because this cycle is actually this like death and rebirth cycle that we get to practice like every month. It's so cool. It's so fitting that it falls on your birthday, you know? And I just think that's really cool that your first experience was around your birthday time too.
That's a really interesting way to think about it. Normally when I've gotten my period around my birthday, I normally get annoyed because I know that I do not feel very good on the second day in particular. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, but I was supposed to go celebrate. And mm-hmm. I thought I was going to get to do all of these things, and I still can do them, but now I'm going to be miserable. So,
yeah, I know. And it's like, it's kind of like reestablishing the relationship to it, you know, and like, kind of like honoring it in a way to be like, okay, like it's actually, yes, I was supposed to go out and celebrate. Like, I get it. But this is actually a time to like really connect with yourself during it. And even sometimes that like reframe can help with the pain even, you know, so it's just some things to think about, you know?
Yeah, that makes complete sense. And with that, what are some of the ways, like natural ways that mm-hmm. you have found work to reduce pain?
Yeah, totally. Good question. So this question, there can be a million answers to this question, but where I really like to start with people is that, well, we talked a little bit about this too, like stress has a real impact on the cycle. So when, I'll just do this little like run through of maybe this a little sciencey, but when we are in that second half of the cycle, where the luteal phase, where things can kind of feel a little bit more stressful, we have this balance of progesterone to estrogen. And I was saying before that, like if estrogen climbs too high in that phase and like above progesterone, it's called estrogen dominance. And we can then experience more of the PMS signs and symptoms in our body. So what's happening with stress is when we are stressed, our body produces cortisol, and that process and adrenaline, that process takes priority over all the other systems in the body. So when like, it's a very like amazing design, because when we needed that stress to like be the, you know, fight or flight mode kind of thing with our nervous system, when maybe back in the day when we were running from bears in the woods, you know, like we needed stress to take over and to be that signal that everything else needs to stop. And we need to put all of our energy into cortisol and adrenaline and get us out of here. So that means that reproduction, our reproductive system, is one of the first things that gets cut off, because it's like, well, we don't need to be like working on making babies right now because we're in a stressful situation. This is not the environment to be doing that. So like reproduction and also digestion is a whole nother thing, but those are the two things that are the first to be cut off. So cortisol steals from progesterone. It is called the cortisol steal. And progesterone, so there's like this one of these master hormones in the body, it's called pregnenolone, and it either produces cortisol or it produces progesterone. So if your body is in a stress state and you are constantly producing too much cortisol, your body stops producing progesterone. So therefore, in that luteal phase, estrogen is going to be higher than progesterone because progesterone is low due to cortisol. So when we talk about like reducing pain or to like balance our hormones, what we're really talking about is balancing our nervous system and really helping our body to manage stress in a way that can feel stable and regulated. So the daily cycle that we have, there's like a daily cortisol cycle, a daily insulin cycle. We have this circadian rhythm. And then as females, we have this infradian rhythm. But the daily rhythm of like regulating our bodies, making sure that we're like waking up at the same time, we're going to bed at the same time, we're actually allowing our body to heal at night, we're eating our meals at the same times every day. Those kinds of things are actually really, really powerful when we're talking about healing the bigger cycle and to really like allow our hormones to work within the system that it was made to work with. So if we're doing things like skipping breakfast and like drinking a pot of coffee and then not really eating until 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I do work with people where this is the case. And we're obviously, our bodies are going to be kind of like yelling at us like, hey, I actually need some more support. So then when it comes time to bleed, we have this, it's like this conversation, right? Like I was saying, the conversation with the body, it's telling you, hey, we need attention. Like there's something going on here. And it's your body's way of kind of yelling and screaming until we start giving it that regulation and also giving it the rest that it's asking for during menstruation. So there's a lot of things, like there's foods and like, sure, there's supplements and things like that. But really, it's like back to basics when we talk about what's going on with pain. It's really about giving our body its best shot by regulating ourselves on a daily basis and then also to give ourselves rest monthly. You know, because again, the body is yelling. It's like, you know, I think, and the way that I experience it is that every period, like your body holds the memory of the last period. So when it comes back around to menstruation and it's like, it knows that you're not going to give it any rest and you're not going to actually care for it in these ways. It's like, ah, like, it's like yelling, like, no, we don't want to do this again. Like there's tension here. I don't like this. And it's going to scream and resist. But if we show ourselves and we allow this self-trust to really shine through and we show ourselves that we are taking care of our body and we are going to give it the rest that it's asking for and we are going to express when it's time to express and all of these things, that is engaging. I call this the trusting feedback loop in the body. And it's like, oh, okay, I hear you that, or I see you that like you're responding to my messages so I don't have to yell so loud. So this is like a really big roundabout way of saying that like, it's really, it's the stuff that we like almost don't even want to hear. Like we want to be like, tell me what to take, right? Like I'll take this and I'll take that. Like I'll do this and I'll do that. But it really is about having this relationship to our body and like reframing what the pain even is and then acting on its behalf, which usually is simple. It's simple. You know, it's making sure we're eating good, making sure we're sleeping, making sure we're, you know, dealing with our stress, breathing. It's simple. It can be very simple. And that really leads to some stability.
That makes complete sense. With that, though, are there certain foods, or different supplements that you think help with hormone balancing and helping with the pain and all of that?
Yes, I definitely do think there are a couple of things to really be aware of. The first thing is like when we are experiencing specifically cramps in the body, that is a system, like a substance called prostaglandins that are being really active. And prostaglandins are responsible for like, you know, any sort of cramping in the body. So prostaglandin, when it's really high, we're going to have more cramps like that. So there, the body doesn't love things like excess sugar, refined sugar, caffeine. I'm kind of like saying this with a cringe on my face because I know these are sensitive subjects, you know, like people have to have their coffee and I totally get it, but just something to think about, you know, so sugar, caffeine, heavy dairy products, those are all going to really increase the prostaglandin production in the body. which is going to increase cramps when we have that estrogen dominance. So those are some things to kind of keep an eye on. And then as far as foods to eat, because I really also am a big proponent of not necessarily restricting ourselves and saying, I can't eat this, but what are we going to add to our diet? What are we going to add in that feels easy? Because taking things away is too hard. It's just too hard. It doesn't work. We end up in this like shame spiral. It just doesn't work. So what do we want to add in? And when we talk about hormone balancing, we want to talk about what I like to go to first is fiber, because fiber is something that doesn't actually get digested in our intestines. It actually is something that helps to sweep the intestines and clear things away. So our body has, you know, I was talking about the circadian rhythm. It has this daily cycle that it's also going through, and our body releases excess hormones every day if we are eliminating properly, which means pooping. So fiber is going to help bulk up your stool and is going to allow you to have like really nice, full, regular poops. And that is going to actually take all of the hormones that are supposed to be exited from the body and allow that to happen every single day. Because if we aren't pooping and we aren't having these full release of elimination of our waste, the hormones that are supposed to leave our body every day, they get stuck and they get reabsorbed into the bloodstream. And then that's how we also can come across things like estrogen dominance, because we're supposed to release the estrogen, but it's getting like reuptook into the body and can cause like abnormal levels. So if you're looking for a place to start, I really suggest thinking about your fiber intake. So that's going to be like the vegetables that are really like very hearty and fibrous. Like I love broccoli for this. I love the leafy greens, like the roughage, you know, that kind of thing is really, really important to get into your diet, if only for the fiber alone. For hormones, it's again, like, you know, we want to say there's all this crazy stuff to do, but it can be very, very simple too.
That is really good to know. I mean, it makes complete sense, but it's something I never would have thought about necessarily. So that is really good information.
Yeah. Yeah. Pooping is, I never thought I would talk so much about poop, but I do, you know, and it's such an important process in the body. So, and it's part of that daily regulation. Like I want you to be pooping every day. It would be really awesome if that was the first thing that you did in the morning. You can train yourself to do that by drinking warm water in the morning, like having a couple of glasses of warm water until you have to poop. It really helps to push things along. So if you struggle with that, you know, I understand there's all different kinds of poop. If you're interested in poop, there's something called the Bristol stool chart. I suggest you look that up. So you can see where you land on this like healthy poop scale. But yeah, really trying to train your body to eliminate is like just as important as what you put into your body. So I suggest that.
That is good advice. And with the warm water, is that something that people could like make tea or just straight warm water?
Yeah. I think either one is fine. I think either one is fine. Warm water with a little bit of lemon, because water alone isn't really the thing. Like water alone, and I love that you're saying this, like is not, especially the water that we have nowadays, is just stripped and chemicals added and all that stuff. It's crazy. But like ultimately we're supposed to be drinking glacial water and spring water, like as natural animals, you know, on the earth. So our water isn't really, we really want to have electrolytes, and lemon is going to be really good for that. And then tea does help to remineralize the water that we have now. So tea is really amazing, but in the beginning of the day, cause some tea can also be dehydrating. So, warm water with lemon, that's my suggestion.
Awesome. And with, our periods and symptoms and all of that, what would you say are like some normal symptoms that aren't talked about, or people may have them and think that they're not normal?
Yeah. Yeah. So good. Such a good question. So mood swings. I think that's the biggest, the one of the biggest things that, because of the messaging, because of what we, what our culture and society expect of us, we just hear a lot of times that like, oh, you're just PMSing. Like, oh, you're just PMSing. You're just like a girl on her period or whatever. And it's like our emotions are completely brushed off. And it's been so normalized that women are supposed to be suffering. And that is just not true. So I, you know, of course it's not true. We're not here to suffer. That's not what this is. So, and if we are suffering, that's a sign. There's you know, there's signals here. It's this conversation your body's trying to talk to you. So, the changes in emotions are normal, but if you have like serious mood swings where you feel like you are like evil, you know, the week before your period or something, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. There's, you know, there's PMS, there's PMDD, which is not actually a hormonal challenge. It's actually the way that we relate to the hormonal shifts. So that's more of a nervous system thing with our stress responses. We could go into a whole thing about that. But yeah, so if you are having like really, really intense mood swings, it's not just normal. Like that's not just okay. And that's something I think that needs more validation in the world, that like women are not supposed to be suffering and they're not supposed to just be like completely outside of themselves every month. I hear a lot of times people say, oh, I only have 2 good weeks out of the month. And the other two, I'm just like a completely different person. So that is not normal. It's, there's a difference between normal and natural. So mm-hmm. it may be normal, right? Like normal, everyone's doing it, but that doesn't mean that's how it's supposed to be. So that's something to look for. And then along with that, the physical symptoms like headaches, a lot of people assume that they're only going to have these sort of symptoms in their premenstrual week, but you can also get cyclical headaches, you know, during ovulation or things like that. And it's, you may be thinking, oh, this is just stress, and it probably is what is going on. But if you notice the pattern cyclically, it gives you way more of a roadmap of where and what to do with those types of symptoms, right? So those are some big ones. You know, cramping is pretty normal, but again, it's not natural. Like we don't, there should be sensation that's going on. Like you will be able to feel the menstruation, but if you're having cramps, like the way I was having them, debilitating cramps, that is not natural. It should not be like that. It should be a sensation where you can feel it, but it's like almost like, you know, and I encourage my clients a lot of times to find new words for their pain. So like yelling or singing really loudly, you know, that there's, those are two different things. So which one is it? You know, if you feel like it's yelling, that's not great. If you feel like it's singing, that's better. You know, and same thing with your body aches, like, back aches, breast tenderness. That's another one. Breast tenderness is normal. People experience that a lot, but it is a symptom. It's a sign that there may be estrogen buildup because our breasts, hold a lot of that. And, something that I really suggest that's been huge, especially because this, you know, breast cancer has run in my family and a lot of breast cancer is due to excess estrogen, is actually doing a breast massage, like a self breast massage. And not just for the sake of checking yourself, but really for the sake of sending love to your body and allowing that area to feel like it's loved instead of like it's being checked on, you know? So there's, you know, a lot of, there's great like oils and balms and things that you can use to really release and to like, release, move the lymph around and move the tissue around. And doing a couple cycles of that is really going to help with breast pain, things like that too.
That's really good to know. I definitely get breast pain on my period. And in this past year, it started to somewhat go over into my armpit, which I did not know was a thing at first. Mm-hmm. And I know that like, obviously over time, our cycle changes, different symptoms may change, whatever. But at first I was so worried and didn't realize that that could actually happen. And yeah, so there's definitely a lot of things that over time I've been like, is this normal?
Yeah. Yeah. The, your breast tissue actually wraps around. So like wherever like your breast is, and it wraps around your back, like into your armpit and a little bit onto your back. So that is all breast tissue. So when you're doing a like a self massage, to really make sure you're massaging your armpits, a little bit of the back, you know, like, I don't know, like on my body, it's like, I can tell because like there's, it's like, you know, it's just like, there's a little more meat in my back, like my upper back. There's like this like meaty portion here. And like, that's all breast tissue there. So giving yourself that massage, like even if you're experiencing it in the moment, breast pain, like even just taking a moment, going to the bathroom by yourself, just start giving yourself a little bit of a massage, do some breathing through your nose. Like it'll go a long way to really relieve that.
That's awesome to know. I've never done that. I normally use heat and then just suffer through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I recommend giving yourself that love, you know, that self-massage love, even on other parts of your body, like, you know, your arms and your legs. And if you're dealing with, you know, pelvic cramps, like menstrual cramps in the front too, like pelvic massage and just like massaging your abdomen. It's really nice to be able to have your own hands be a source of healing for yourself too. I'm a big proponent of that.
That's awesome advice. And on the Instagram for the podcast, I did a poll the other day and asked if anyone had any questions about their cycle. And I only got one answer. And I know that you're not a doctor or anything, but the person asked, why do I have very high estrogen but haven't had a period for 8 months?
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, so the period, haven't had a period for 8 months. That is interesting, and really high estrogen. Yeah, I would say that, okay, so estrogen doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have your period. Like the second half of the cycle where progesterone is the main hormone that's going on, that is actually the signal to release the endometrium, is when progesterone gets to a certain level. So I would suggest, without being a doctor, to actually have your progesterone levels checked. That is for sure the route to go. Like again, like you could have really high estrogen and really low progesterone, and you may not be getting the signal for your body to actually release the endometrium because the progesterone isn't at the right level. So yeah, not a total expert on that, but that's my advice. I would definitely suggest bringing that up with your doctor there.
Awesome. I will make sure that I send her the link to this episode when it's out. And is there anything else that I didn't ask or that we didn't cover that you would like to add?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's probably it. I think like the main thing that I want to stress here, which is a funny choice of words, is that stress is, you know, it's something that we all hear, and I think we can kind of glaze over it, like, oh yeah, stress. No, I know. I gotta like get my stress in order, you know. But like, really, like, what does that mean to you? Because those things, like the way that we relate to stress, it really sets the tone for every system in our body, including our healthy menstrual cycle and our healthy hormone cycle. So when we talk about hormones, you know, like, again, like we could get into so specific, but why even stress ourselves out with that when we can really zoom out and say, like, what is the overall state of my body, and how can I then kind of, you know, adjust and regulate that? And like, those are the things that are really going to move the needle, more so than like, what exactly are you eating? You know, it's really how we do things more so than the exactly what, you know? So that's the thing I want to leave everyone with, is that, you know, the way that we respond to things, and we have a choice of how that is, even though we may not at this point be trusting what our body is doing, but we actually do have a choice of how we respond to it. So listening to our body and engaging in that trusting feedback loop is really important when we're talking about like regulating hormones.
That is awesome. And I really appreciate you giving me and the listeners some of your time today. I have definitely learned some things and enjoyed our conversation. Where can people find you on social media and how can they work with you as a coach?
Yes. So I am mostly on Instagram and you can find me at Sarah E. Corman. So it's S-A-R-A-H-E-K-O-R-M-A-N. That's where you can find me the most. You can also go to my booking page and that I'm sure we'll leave a link at the bottom here, but it's sarahcorman.podia.com. So it's P-O-D-I-A.com. And you can schedule a first call there and then we can kind of go from there. I just like to chat and see what kind of container for coaching is best based off of what's going on for you. You can also leave me a message there and you can say hi. We can like have a little bit of a chat if you have something that you're trying to talk about. That's the best way to find me and to also be on my email list. I am actually in the process of writing a course right now where it's going to be a self-paced course that you can also engage in live sessions at the same time. So you don't want to miss this, like be on my email list and you'll definitely be the first to hear about it. So if you go to sarahcorman.podia.com, you can sign up for my email list there too.
That is awesome. And I will definitely put a link to that in my Instagram stories after this is out. And for any listeners, and if you go on to the podcast Instagram, the beautiful underscore legacy, there is a highlight and it's called guest links. So if you ever listen to an episode of the podcast and we talk about like someone's book coming out or their podcast or whatever it is, you can find all of their links there and it will say like what episode they were on and all of that information. And if you ever have any questions and you can't find that or an episode guest that you were looking for, definitely feel free to message me at the beautiful underscore legacy on Instagram and I can make sure I connect you with the right people. And with the podcast being called Beautiful Legacy, I like to ask all my guests, what kind of legacy do you want to leave and why?
Yes. Yeah. I would say that I loved this. I love that you asked me this question in advance. It really gave me time to think about it. And I actually appreciate this exercise. So thank you. But I would say what I want to leave behind is this message of self-empowerment and self-healing. Because I think a lot of times we really are really good at giving our power away, you know, to authorities or leaders, which is great. But before we truly understand what is best for us and what we need, I think it does a disservice to just blindly follow advice that may or may not even be right for us. And I really want people to explore what that means for themselves first. And like I said before, like if you do need to see a doctor, what I do with people in our coaching containers is I have you track your cycle for 3 months. And like, think of how empowering it would be to go to your gynecologist and say, I have 3 months of tracking on myself. Like, this is what's been going on for me for 3 months. That just starts a whole different conversation with that person. And you can really start like from a totally different jumping off point. If you show up with your own self-empowerment, when we're actually talking about you, you know, so that's the legacy I want to leave behind is that, you know, self-empowerment and self-healing is really where we start. And I think a lot of people come here as an alternative, but I want to start here.
That is so awesome. I love that. And besides the coaching, how are you making that happen?
Yes. Thank you so much for this question too. So yes, I am coaching and providing a space for that kind of exploration to happen. But also I mentioned in the beginning that I am a artist. So I'm a jewelry and metalsmith, jewelry designer. So what I do is I create one of a kind custom pieces for people who are on some sort of self-awareness journey. Because a lot of times like this kind of stuff, you know, we can really intellectualize it and we can like think that we know. And a lot of this healing work like kind of lives up in the thought realm. So I like to pull our intentions down into the physical and create pieces of jewelry for people to wear so that they can be reminded of this journey that they're on, you know, this healing path or self-awareness journey, or just, you know, like even like with food or exercise or reminders of like things that we want to be doing, or even just how far we've come, you know, being able to put, sometimes I call them trail markers, to be able to like put a mark on the trail. Like, I've come this far. Obviously I still have this left, but here's a time where I want to put a mark on the trail to say like, I'm celebrating this, or, you know, this is something that I have accomplished. And I think that's just as important, because self-healing is a never-ending story. And if we don't stop along the way to really anchor in our intentions to what we're doing, and to like give ourselves that credit, then it can just feel daunting forever. So that's something that I really enjoy doing for clients and for people. I create custom jewelry. So you can also get a hold of me for something like that too, through all of those avenues. And I am always so honored to create for people like that.
That is awesome. I didn't know you did that. So that is really cool. Do you post any pictures on your Instagram effects? I don't remember ever seeing any of those.
I know that. Yeah, there's a highlight that has jewelry, and then they're kind of sprinkled in here and there. So if you just scroll, you'll see some of the things that I've made. But there's a highlight that says, I think it says talismans, custom talismans or something like that.
Awesome. I'm definitely going to have to check that out now.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. It's awesome.
And again, thank you so much for your time. And to the listeners, as always, you are loved, you are worth it, you are priceless, and I will talk to you all later.
Thank you.
Of course.